All right, we're back for part two here. Zilpha's got her glass of milk and her rice. You know, my mom used to pour milk on rice.
With cinnamon sugar?
Yes.
That's good stuff.
That is the good stuff.
All right, now we've talked about the top 10 reasons to stay in the church. And I will point out for those who would doubt that we did have on there that it was true. Would be a good reason to stay in the church. all right, let's talk about top 10 reasons to leave the church.
Hold on, John. I got to put on my angry face for this phase.
No.
You still need your smile.
These are all good. Honest to goodness, we came up with this list. Zilpha and I were on a road trip when we started this list. We were trying to think through the things that actually are good reasons to leave and good reasons to stay in the church. And I think these reasons are all valid. I mean, to review, you know, it's a good social thing. It helps you be a better person. It's a good place to raise kids. You're going to suffer from your family relationships, but to maintain your family relationships, you enjoy it. It's true. And these are all reasons to stay in the church. But I do think there are good reasons to leave the church.
John, can I introduce the number 10 reason?
This is yours.
Sure.
Oh, man. Number 10 reason, it's boring.
It's a waste of time.
Right.
And it's boring.
And what I want to interject is each of these reasons stand on their own. I mean, I would say that being boring is reason enough to leave the church. There's no reason that you should waste your time spending your life in drudgery, boredom.
Yeah, amen. When my faith kind of really just like lost all its legs and collapsed, I was one little tiny part of me, that little angel on my shoulder, was screaming for joy. Finally, I don't have to force myself to go to 3 hours.
That was the angel. You mean the little
devil?
No,
the angel on my shoulder was bored too.
I've met people who believe the church, but say they can't go because it's boring. And that's probably good because they would be angry and pissy and terrible to be around if they had to go to church.
Wouldn't you call those Jack Mormons?
My TBM mindset would call them out because, you know, you can suffer for your faith 3 hours a week. You can go.
It's way more than 3 hours. Yeah.
But I think there's this sort of condescending attitude that gets trotted out by a few, not everybody, but it doesn't matter. We're not here to entertain. We can be as pathetically boring as possible because we're the true church. And I'm saying that's not true. You could be the true church and be limited to a mere tiny percentage of the world's population because it's awful.
You know. I told my wife that I would enjoy sacrament. All they had to do would bring in a guitar and some drums, and I would love being there.
Bagpipes.
Because, I mean, I enjoy singing too. It's the rest of it. I could make do with some boring talks if I had some jazzy music to go with it.
I'm with you.
There's no joy in those meetings at all.
And it's like the church. I mean, I don't want to jump on the correlation thing again, but the church has just sucked every bit of joy out of church in the last 50 years. And,
I have to tell a little story. Meat. When you said something about a guitar and whatnot, my sister and her husband, he's a born-again Christian, and so she left or was disfellowshipped probably her senior or maybe freshman year of college, and she got offended, and then she never went back. And so
she got offended because she was disfellowshipped?
I think for the reason she was disfellowshipped, okay. Yes. She had a bishop that was really super Nazi on the standards, and she was really irritated because she's a good girl. I mean, just plain and simple.
She made a mistake, and then...
I don't know. I think she drank some beers or something. I don't think that qualifies as a mistake. But anyway, so she and her husband attend an evangelical Christian church, and one thing you never hear in Mormon churches, we're looking for a new church. And so she and her husband were looking for a new Christian church, you know, one that kind of suited their fancy and whatnot. And so they had gone to a couple different churches, and one had this really rockin' band, and they loved it, and they started going. And it just so happened that Easter was coming, and they had, like, super resurrection band power. And then she's telling the story. All of a sudden, from the top of the rafters, there's this dude on a cross that gets lowered down in a gold lamé, like, loincloth.
Awesome.
And she looked at her husband, and he looked at her, and they didn't say a word. It's like, on the drive home, still silent. And her husband just kind of looked at her, and he goes, "Babe, I think we need to draw the line." at the gold lame Speedo Jesus. She's like, oh, I'm so glad you said, like, she's still like this ultra conservative, and they, but they wanted a rockin' service. They had to draw the line at gold lame Jesus on a cross. But how awesome would that have been? Just once.
The spirit
is giving me goosebumps.
It's true, isn't it?
Wait, you mentioned guitars. Are guitars not allowed? I mean, I understand I can't bring my axe in, you know, and like.
No, you can't even clap in an enjoyment.
No
horns. Guitars, trumpets.
Well, horns are the devil's brass.
Anything that blows.
Yeah, but what are
the devil? French horns should be freedom horns.
Wait. A flute is allowed, and that's the most penile instrument there is.
Well, tiny penile. That's probably why it's allowed.
That's why the church only allows women to blow on the flutes in sacrament. No men on the flutes. All right. Number nine, it's damaging to family relationships. So this is sort of the flip side, and you know, and we have notes here. You know, they don't let people go to weddings. They take fathers away from families. They encourage people to turn against their family. So I mean, for me, this was a very serious one in going outside the church. If you leave the church and allow your children to go to church, the church will try to turn them against you at some point. They will say that you're not a good father, or that you need to have priesthood in your home from some other source, and the church actively divides families. Period. Period.
I'm just thinking, you know, that could have been up there, the reasons to stay, because, you know, the damage to your family prevented, right?
It could have been. That's why these lists are sort of situational, but I think that damage to family relationships that it causes, I think a lot of ex-Mormons leave the church because they don't want the damage to perpetuate through the next generation. Yeah. And I think we talked about that in one of the podcasts. At some point, you have to sort of turn your back on your parents and save your kids. And if that's what it comes down to, and I think we've talked about this over and over again, but that the church's policy on weddings is hugely damaging, especially if you have a part member family.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at that in, you know, 10, 15 years. And, well, it's going to be weird to be on the outside.
It's going
to
hurt.
Yeah, it is.
Right. That, I mean, ultimately, it's a rejection. And, you know, they say, oh, you can go to the temple if you want.
So if you stay in the church, then you're supporting these behaviors. Is that kind of the idea here? If you leave, then you're saying, I'm not going to put up with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and we'll get into that a little bit more. But I think saying the church is damaging to family relationships, meaning the church values its own structures more than it does family, and it's willing to discard family. You know, so for example, the church will call men to be bishops. We're going to spend 30 to 40 hours a week on that. That's not what they should be doing with their family situation. But the church will say that's a sacrifice and there'll be rewards in heaven and da 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 da.
Or even if they have young children at home, not only are the children going to miss out on their father, but the spouse is going to have to take so much of the burden. It's going to be hard on their marriage.
So these are all just examples. I'm saying one of the reasons to leave the church is that the church says it's a family organization, but it itself will subvert the family for its own causes. And because of that, that's a reason to not support the church.
Well, and talking about the bishops, that's why most congregations hire their clergy, because it is a full-time job.
Right, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But you're not supposed to have a full-time job plus being a clergyman.
Well, you're talking, so there's like, The bishop is time away from his family. There's like the temple where the family members aren't worthy enough to go into it.
Or even children, you know, your teenage sibling couldn't attend your wedding. I mean, that's divisive.
Yeah, I mean, when my brother got married, I was 17. I was a full active member of the church. I wasn't allowed to attend his wedding.
The TBM remnants in my mind says that all those things are worthwhile for those future rewards, right?
For the betterment
of the person.
But if my parents were being sealed, I would have been able to go.
But what makes a 17-year-old better for not having attended his brother's wedding?
Well, maybe that's kind of like the cookie to get them on the right path, right?
Yeah.
No.
I agree with you. I agree with you, because that's my whole point, is the church is happy to manipulate family relationships for its own ends.
If I'm going to a church, man, I want them to draw some boundaries. You know, I want them to be, you know, holy holies, and your dirty Gentiles can't come in, right?
You do?
Wait.
If I'm going to church, right?
You want to be part of that kind of church?
I'd be one of the chosen people, Zilpha. If all you right, want to right, be one right. of the chosen people right. too, I'll tell you where you can come 3 hours a week, you know, and worship with me, right?
Wow, you really have a
place to go?
No, I'm just saying.
I know.
It's my TBM mindset.
I enjoy your fervor for this list much more than I enjoyed you for the
so
stay.
I throw the word around every time. It's like, you know, I always have to throw the word culty in, but the when organizations start valuing themselves above familial relationships, that's culty behavior. That's psychologically unhealthy behavior. So I'm saying the number 9 reason to not go to church, to leave the church, is because of the church's manipulation and disregard for family relationships. You can find stories in the Ensign that point out that somebody severed all of their family relationships to join the church as a convert, and it will point this out as a good thing.
No, I'm with you, John. I see where you're going. I was just trying to think if that's a specific Mormon stance that, you know, value before service, or value family before service. And specifically, I think coming from a military background, I mean, that's sort of military mindset too. That's you join, you sacrifice for your country.
Well, I've said before, the military is a cult too.
Straight up, you sign up, and yeah, absolutely. But we as Americans, you know, we value that service. That translates directly into the Mormon culture. So,
Is that a good thing? Is that?
But I think to your point, I think that's true. But I think that's one of the things that psychologists and others who write about the damage the military caused to family is because of that division of the family. And here we're doing that sort of thing. There's an understanding that we have a foreign war that we have to send people over to fight. So it's sort of a sacrifice that some people are willing to make and that we acknowledge and we try to take care of them. We're sort of fostering that on our own people. The church has the resources to train full-time bishops and pay them. In the past, they've been paid. But it's not been the whole church history that bishops haven't been paid. In the early days of the church, the bishops pulled their resources out of the bishop's storehouse. So if I was the bishop, it was a full-time job, and I fed my family out of the bishop's storehouse. So the idea that we don't have a paid bishopric is a new concept.
Well, and they don't really have a good reason for keeping family members out of a wedding.
No, yeah, either. Some of that stuff is just so easy to change.
Isn't it more like a policy? Where did I just read this? The civil marriage, not having a civil marriage before a temple marriage, is not a doctrine. It's a policy.
You'd have to say it's a policy because in countries where it's required that you be open married publicly.
So I would like to know why, like Zilpha said, why are they enforcing the policy? Where did this policy come from? Where is it written? Who wrote it?
Because it helps them as an organization.
It's another level of control.
Well, I know this, but I'm just wanting to know, where is it written?
In the church handbook of instruction.
That I can't see.
So the premise you're going into this is top 10 reasons to go when you have doubts, which implies that you have some faith in the system, in the church still, correct?
No, I'm not even on this list implying belief. I'm saying number 9, an organization that damages families, that's sufficient cause to leave the organization.
Or not even join.
Right.
I'm still not buying like the complete damage there, like say the bishops are serving or like going on missions.
You need to know more bishops' kids.
No way. I was a bishop's kid.
It's all coming. Aren't you an apostate? Aren't you a heretic?
You don't think it's damaging to families to have the grandparents going on missions? I mean, I've heard of grandparents going on mission after mission. They basically miss out on helping out their kids with their kids and seeing their grandkids grow up. I think that's damaging to families.
I can see that some people are damaged and there's some instances where it's bad, but I don't think all instances.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
Too broad a blanket just to throw that callings damage people. Well, even if
it has to do with attitude and what you're willing to sacrifice for the organization.
We're not saying this is sufficient cause for everybody. Just right. Like in the top list, number 7 was people should stay in the church because they enjoy it. Not everybody enjoys it, but that's the reason for some people. All right, let's move forward. Number 8, the us versus them attitude that the church fosters. The church, and if you listen to our, you know, we pointed this out in the battle hymns for dummies.
I was going
to
say that, John. I was like, that's what makes those Sims great.
The church, and especially in the past, but still today, really fosters we are God's chosen people. Everybody else is the enemies. They'll be surely smitten at last. That people aren't. This is really bad for apostates. You know, the churches and fundamentalist organizations like the Mormon Church divide the world into three groups: us, the world, and the apostates. And those are three categories of people, and they're all separated.
I wonder though if anybody's ever left the church just because of this reason. I would doubt it.
Well, I think a little bit of the Prop 8 issue is a bit on that us versus them, isn't it?
Sort of.
Yeah.
We do get to that more specifically.
I'm not saying people do leave the church.
Well, I'm just trying to think of people leaving because us versus them thinking.
I know that for me, when I first started kind of understanding how special I was for being Mormon, that was the beginning of why I didn't believe.
It's like the someone posted, like, how many coincidences can I possibly have? You know, being born in the true church
That was the mantra. You are so special. You were born in white skin, you know, and you were born into a Mormon family. You were born in the United States.
Right.
So, you were born during this dispensation. And just the more I heard it, and then I, you know, it was right after I was probably about, I don't know, maybe 10 when blacks got the priesthood. So I remember hearing little things here and there. And I never buy it. I never bought it. It was just the beginning of this doesn't feel right. This can't be the true church. This can't be it. This can't be it.
I think you can understand this, why this is bad when you take it to its nth degree, which is if you look at fundamentalists, you look at these guys who are living in a compound or living down in Colorado City, and even there they're infighting. Like if you talk to the fundies, they will point out that they're more special than all the other fundies around them that are going to hell. So they ultimately believe they're just this like handful. Like, how do you believe in a God that really is only concerned about like 1,000 people? And it's because they've taken this to its natural. And I know when I grew up in the church, there was sort of this attitude that we were more better Mormons. So if like there was a ward dinner at 7, we always showed up at 6:30, put up the chairs, and you know, and because we were going to out Mormon the rest of the Mormons, and that's really common in the culture. So I think the reason it's good enough, it's a sufficient reason, is it's because it's psychologically unhealthy way to view the world, and it can lead to damaging things, all of extreme fundamentalism and nationalism. And look at when the church got a hold of the anti-communist movement, the John Birchers, it just fed right into that us and them beliefs of the church and produced this weirdness that's still floating around in the church today, you know?
Well, absolutely. And it shuts down dialogue. If the church wants to grow, it has to be able to talk about its issues openly. And if everyone's always anti-Mormon, if they have a difference of opinion,
right,
no one can discuss it. You won't hear it.
That's an excellent point. The church, it becomes, they can't fix their own problems. We're normally an organization, you'd be able to address that, because anybody who even points out a problem is them. You're them. You're not part of us. You know.
I'd be curious to know if how much the tone of the missionary discussions have changed, considering the us and the them. We're trying to convert the thems. We're trying to bring those people into our fold.
No, the ones we're trying to convert are us. They just don't know it yet.
Well, right? Unfortunately.
Well, I think to that point, if you look at really early stuff, you know, 19th century writings and some of those early tracts, they were very much them, you know, flee to Zion, the world's a corrupt place, flee the whore of Babylon sort of dialogue. And now it's really an us. See, we're all like you. Mormons are just like everybody else.
I'm a Mormon campaign.
I'm a Mormon. But it's sort of a bait and switch, because once you get in, then Mormons are more special.
Exactly. That's...
Well, I think
that's going to have to dissipate considerably.
I think people who go on foreign missions tend to see this more clearly, maybe, because... people who become familiar with other cultures and other ways of viewing the world would love them and respect that culture and the different way of seeing the world, then it becomes hard to come back to this way of thinking ever, you know, that we're special and everybody else is like, they don't get it. Like, they're not hearing the spirit or whatever.
Yeah, I'm on board that this is a negative behavior, but I don't think it's going to go away, because I think a lot of converts and active members really enjoy that feeling of being special. You know, I, as a missionary, I enjoyed the me against the world, you know, bring on the trials and tribulations, because I was a soldier of God. I can take it, bring it, you know.
A lot of people, the MTC, did that to you.
I had that in my youth, you know. I was chosen.
You probably still have it.
I am the chosen generation.
That's why you're an ex-Mormon, because you think ex-Mormons are smarter than Mormons. See, it didn't go away. No, and I think that's why it's a sufficient reason to leave the church, is if you don't buy into this dichotomy, then, you know, you're going to leave for that. If you don't feel like I'm strongly part of the Mormon identity, and Mormons take their identity, they are Americans second, Mormons first, above everything else. And if you don't buy that, you're never going to fully gel into a Mormon ward. Okay. Number 7, which I think is a very important one. It probably should be up higher on the list. It is not relevant enough in my life. I think that's sufficient. And this is a lot of the Jack Mormons, that for whatever reason, Mormonism may be true or whatever, but it's not meaningful to me. It doesn't do it for me. And frankly, you know, this is sort of related to the us and them, but the church does this. It pushes a single track so heavily, the people who are outside that track, you know, a standard nuclear family in a middle-class suburban home with, you know, as many kids as you can handle, and a minivan or an SUV, and soccer practice, and there's a practice, and dyed blonde hair, and all these things that you have to. Not that dyed blonde hair is wrong. And I notice I didn't say boob jobs, because I'm all for boob jobs. But, you know, there's this track. And if you don't fall into that track, you are going to be pushed to the outside. We point out over and over again, if you go into a family ward, you don't have kids, bang, they put you in the primary. They're going to take you out of the stream of normal adult conversation. So if it's not relevant in your life, if you're a single, you know, you're an independent single woman who's unmarried, doesn't want to marry, and is happy with your career, you don't have a place in Mormonism.
We're all nodding our heads.
Yeah.
Good radio.
Yeah. I don't think we join. I think this wouldn't even be to evolve into that woman in the church, and therefore have it be a reason to live would be strange.
Well, this
but
is
it
why,
does happen.
This is why we lose most of the youth. The number that I've heard bannered around in several sources is 80%. They're losing 80% of the youth. Between the ages of like 17 and 21. Now, a certain percentage of those are coming back eventually, but I think this is really the cause. You guys mentioned this before, you're in young women's up to your 18, and bam, you get dropped in the relief side with all these old ladies. You know, it's suddenly the messages have to do with homemaking and treating your husband well, and it just suddenly it's not relevant in your life anymore.
Do you think this is when I say new, last 20 years, sort of a problem for the church? Because I think my cultural memory of, say, the 50s, you know, to be an American, you were cookie cutter, you fit in, you know, you were straight, you weren't gay, you combed your hair one part, you know, to the left. Everybody tried to fit that Wally Beaver impression. And now I think it's more cultural to be that, you know, your own self, to be whatever you are. And so that, you know, you don't fall into the church's cookie cutter mold anymore. So it's more of a newer problem.
I think so.
And I think people would have been miserable more at that time and said, well, this is just the way I have to do.
And
more people are saying, the church is making me miserable. I'm not going to go, even though I might believe it. You know, where in the 50s, you know, if you were gay, you just got married. There wasn't really any other choice except for on the fringe, you know, and you just laid back and thought of England.
And I think speaking of the youth, I think it's more acceptable to them or I guess it's the archaic kinds of morality ideas are less acceptable to them. They're more okay with, you know, things like masturbation, homosexuality. I think that
masturbating homosexuals, because of the access
that they have, and that they feel connected kind of to the world. I think they have a different outlook than the 80-year-olds running the church do.
I think so. I think this is
it all started with MTV.
it's something that we need to have a whole podcast on, which is the Jack Mormons, which outnumber all other types of Mormons at least 2-1. And we never talk about them, but they are everywhere. And those are people who sort of believe the church, but don't go for various reasons. And,
paranoia, they could be your neighbor. could be a coworker.
If you bump into somebody in Utah, odds are they're a Jack Mormon. And we don't give them enough credit because it's a really fascinating group because it is the biggest group. And number 7 probably feeds most of those guys that they might believe the church, but they also just live with their boyfriend. So they don't go to church because they don't want to be ostracized or whatever, but you know, it's not relevant in their lives. Okay, number 6, financial reasons. It is expensive to be a member of the church.
You
have to pay, and if you don't pay, you can't be saved. You are withheld from saving ordinances. So 10% is a lot of money, and people say I think in the most part this is true. The church says, well, you decide, but then there's enough talks to talk about a full and honest. You decide what a full tithe is.
Net gross, first thing of your flock.
You decide?
No.
But I've known enough people whose bishops have called. I was talking to a guy a year or so ago who thought he wasn't paying enough tithing, and he demanded that he brought in his pay stubs.
The bishop thought he wasn't paying enough tithing? Well, I remember reading, I think it was in Dialogue, about at BYU, was it in the 80s?
Oh, yeah, this was Sunstone most recent, wasn't it?
Sunstone? Maybe it was.
Yeah, under Ernie Wilkinson, they actually, BYU asked the bishops, and they got the records from the church.
They were hunting down the professors who weren't full tithe payers.
So BYU... Whoa. Requested from the church their tithing receipts. The church gave it to them.
If they doubted the professor's word.
Anyway, I mean, that's history. I don't think that happens very often. But, you know, it is true that the church is a very, very expensive endeavor. And, you know, that's it.
Well,
that's why you take stock options at work. You know, no cash. You're good.
There you go.
Build your wealth.
But wouldn't that count as increase?
The church only works in cash funds, though. So you can't give them stocks, can you?
But yeah. You can give them stocks.
Everyone in the room just nodded. Oh, yes.
Yeah, you can.
You can give them.
But count as tithing, though?
Yeah.
I don't know what the tithing.
As a matter of fact, I had a friend of mine who explained. He was really super uber Mormon, still is, and he was explaining to me with glee how he could pay his full tithing with stocks and save money because the stock was worth more. And he had this whole thing worked out. And I'm like, I pay what you want to pay, you know.
Well, sweet. So you buy low at the IPO, wait for your Google stocks to hit that 800 mark, turn it in, say it counts for however many years.
What I think is funny about tithing is the church has played ambiguity to their own favor. You know, the whole idea of increase is a very agrarian idea, right? You know, you take and you save so much seed, or you have a flock of a certain size, and then you breed new cows, or you sow those seeds, and then you deduct from it, you know, what you had from before.
The kind of the sadist, less active Mormon in me wants to grow a whole bunch of zucchini plants, you know, and bring in 10% and just overload.
10% of my increase.
But, you know, to go to work today costs you money. The same way you have to buy seed corn, you have to buy clothing, you have to drive yourself in. Under the exact same principle, you should deduct all that stuff from your tithing. But, you know, you'll never hear a talk saying
Christmas presents.
Now,
John, Zilpha.
I have been guilty of this before, that there are people who point out to us that we criticize the church and we never give the community of Christ props. And the community of Christ says tithing is after you pay for your food, shelter, and you know your basic needs. Then you pay 10% on your increase above that.
Very open interpretation. Your needs could go far.
Now, the church has a really mixed history. There are several times in church history where even if you'd been paid tithing, the church assessed you on your current property. I'd love to see them do this today, where they say, all right, well, we're doing an assessment this year, and your house is worth $100,000, so you owe us $10,000. And for a lot of years, the church kept books. So what the bishop did is they assessed your value, and then they wrote it down, and they kept a tally of how much the church thought that you owed them. So, I mean, the church has made some progress on that front. But
it's just too big to do that now. I bet you they would if they could.
Well, that's when the bishops were full time. So maybe.
And they got paid.
And they got paid out of the bishop's storehouse. Okay. Number five, discrimination, current and historic. This one is a huge one for me. If I ever think back, oh, may I go back to church? I always come back to that. I can't join the church because it's homophobic and racist. I have a lot of very good friends who want to support the church. They're sort of liberal Mormons, and they say they want to change the church on a homosexual front. But I cannot understand how anybody who supports gay rights would be part of what is ostensibly the single largest anti-gay organization in the United States. I mean, is there any organization that you can think of that spends more money or more rhetoric against the gay? If you love homosexual people, you shouldn't be part of the Mormon Church. Period. I mean, it's an anti-gay organization. And to say I'm for gay rights but I'm a Mormon, that's an oxymoron.
But what if you could make a difference and by your presence change people's attitudes within the church?
To me, it's a reductio ad absurdum if you apply it to anything else. What if you could change the KKK by joining it and showing them there's, you know, the Jews are our friends or whatever?
So you think that if people left en masse because of the homosexuality issue, the church would change just as easily as if they stayed in?
That's my opinion. If everybody who didn't agree with the church on homosexuality right now got up and walked out, they would force the change.
We should do a walkout this Sunday.
I'm going to say that there's not that large a percentage of adult members, of a certain age up that.
I would say the number is bigger.
There have been a lot of people who have left over that.
There's tons of people who are uncomfortable with the church position. They may not be full on, supporters of unconditional gay rights or whatever, but there's a lot of people, and especially the polls show the younger you are, like if you're under 30. Right,
that's what I was getting at. I think, that over 30, I think there's enough of them that are core to the church that wouldn't walk out, that, the church would blink and say, they weren't faithful. They're not following the prophet.
So you think it wouldn't be enough people to make a difference? No. Do you think it would be enough people to make a difference if they stayed in?
Well, I think the key to change is really getting the people in the leadership moving up that are open-minded. And if everyone who's as John puts it, loves gays, gets out, who's going to be left in? You're going to get more fundamentalists. You're going to get more hard on the topic.
I know, but this is where I'm hardline. Everybody in the church raises their hand twice a year and says they support the church. And you are fundamentally, if you are a supporter of gay rights, this is John speaking, I don't see how you can in good conscience be a member of the church.
Well,
it's a little hypocritical.
Right. We're all hypocrites on some level.
But, yeah.
I mean, but this is a big one. Right.
Right. But if you go into some of the nitty gritty big issues like, blacks in the priesthood, the behind the scenes, like the Quorum of 12 is split, down the middle. I don't know exact percentages, but.
Wait, you're using past tense.
The blacks.
The church has not retracted one of its racist doctrines.
Right. What I'm saying, to move it along and say, let's open up the priesthood to, to black people. If those guys who said, the church is racist, we're getting out, the church would still have a policy that blacks can't have the priesthood.
Right. But, once again, I have to belabor this point. The church did not allow black people to pray in sacrament.
No, it's
women either.
The church is trying to today
women
say,
should walk.
Oh, it was the priesthood. It wasn't the priesthood. It was
everything.
It's praying in church is not a priesthood ordinance. So.
And women, the black women couldn't go to the temple.
So I just want to point out there was a racist view of the blacks that were inferior. As a matter of fact, we heard some echoes of that when our ward mission leader was over this week.
Oh yeah.
It's still there. It's still in the church. It hasn't those doctrine. It's still in the Pearl of Great Price. It's still in the Book of Mormon. The racist doctrine is not gone. It's still there. We allow the blacks to have the priesthood now, but we're still racist against them. So that's the point. That's a good reason to leave the church.
I think you're right, and I think what happens in the church is not so much that people who disagree with such a doctrine stay in, but society becomes such that the church can no longer hold that position. And it's usually about 20 years behind the rest of society. So I think it'll happen whether or not people stay in or leave, but it's just a matter of time.
I don't know. I think this is maybe like a single issue topic. You know, it's all or nothing. You know, if you discriminate, then I'm not accepting anything else that's good about the church. I would vote that the church, if you can accept that your leadership are human, they're fallible, they make mistakes, then you can recognize that you can have the hand of God in the church and still not...
Wait, are you playing devil's advocate?
No.
Like, if you find out the safe way, I mean, they have really plump melons, but you find out that they have a discrimination policy where they only promote white guys to be...
No, I believe that about the blacks in the priesthood. You know, I thought it was, you know, racist, their own prejudice. It wasn't God. And I stayed in the church, and I know I've had lots of gay friends that I wasn't comfortable with the church's position. I was against the church's position, but I stayed in the church because I felt that we know that they make mistakes and they're fallible and God corrects it later on. So
then why are you in a church with that has modern revelation and modern day prophet if they're going to make mistakes like that?
That's like
that.
Another podcast, right? That's
It is a big topic.
But you're giving reasons why this might be okay because they're just men, but that's not what they are selling, which is we are supremely unique because we have direct revelation. Those kind of mistakes shouldn't be happening if they're really run by an actual omnipotent being called God.
It's kind of like if you
that
go
would
to
intervene with such injustice.
That's fully within Mormon theology to allow mistakes to be made and make mistakes to be corrected.
That's a reason to leave. Then.
It's a reason to leave.
It must be
sort of
higher
like
up.
If you took a calculus class and your teacher's up there and you found out your teacher doesn't understand long division, it's time to get the hell out of there. And that mistake is so big. I don't understand the apologetic response saying, "Well, our leaders are just racist bigots." They were just like the other assholes from that time. You know, it's like...
No, well, my point is, it's like you're picking discrimination for being fallible, but there's so many topics that where they make mistakes. That's
for
number five.
For black people and gays, this is a big freaking
I understand.
Deal.
It's sort of like a husband saying, you know, finding out he had a lover that he visited once a month. He's like, baby, that was less than 1% of the time we were married that I was out stooping other women. You know, I don't see what you're so upset about. Most of the time I was a great husband, you know. You know, it's a huge deal. And there's a long and storied and wonderful history of abolitionists in the United States, people who suffer. Zilf and I were Unitarians for a while. Unitarians have this long tradition of people, Unitarian ministers who were killed for their views on that. And then, meanwhile, the church is just like, yeah, they'll all be our slaves in the celestial kingdom. And that's okay, because we're just products of our time. You know, no, they weren't. There were plenty of people who weren't saying that. Anyway, that's a good reason to leave the church.
Well, and just to follow up, the standard is just, I hold the church to a higher standard when, like I said, they're selling the one true church.
I'm with you. I'm on the same boat. But I'm saying I don't think...
I'm just down below, shackled.
The discrimination is like... my point is, if you can believe that they be fallible, you can accept them to make mistake. If they have to be infallible, make no mistakes, then right, walk.
To me, fallible is like, oh, we chose a really bad location to build that church.
Right.
I'm the choir.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, but there is this question of fallibility, and it's obvious. I've said this before, I'll say it again because I think it's a key point. It's obvious that the brethren can't tell the difference.
Amen. Yeah, agreed.
So right,
that's why I'm not in.
That's a huge problem. All right. So that was number five. The rest of these, it just gets worse. So if you don't like Mormon Expression beating up the church, time to turn
fasten your seatbelt.
All right.
The roller coaster is going down.
Yeah, because I think 10 through 6 were kind of meh. These are all good reasons to leave the church. Number four, it is anti-scientific. And I'm not just talking about that they teach things that disagree with science and reason, but that they are actively anti-scientific. If you go to institute classes on campuses, high school campuses, they are teaching anti-science right now. And the Book of Mormon, you cannot believe in modern science and believe in the Book of Mormon at the same time. The Tower of Babel, the flood,
DNA of the Native Americans.
Yeah, the God turns people black for disobedience.
It makes them white for being very obedient.
Yeah.
Seems reasonable.
No, I think there's a couple communities that are in the church that run tangentially down different paths. Like when I was at BYU, in the BYU school newspaper is called the Daily Universe. They have your editorials, pretty common. Every once in a while, the evolution topic would pop up, and people respond like crazy. And I noticed this trend that in the humanities. You'd usually get the responses say that evolution is bunk, more that the scientists don't know what they're talking about. And then out of the science departments, you'd get the response like, no, evolution is a proven scientific theory. It's the best knowledge that we have. There's this split between the faithful members that one side believing that's bunk, and I think they get that from church, and the other side taking the secular view.
Because they studied it.
And disregarding some of the stuff they learned at church.
Yeah, there's a fascinating principle. You can predict what a Mormon believes in terms of accepting traditional Mormonism of science by what they know about.
Have you guys ever heard that the old standby, President Eyring's father is a great scientist. If he can believe, then who are you?
But if you read his book, his belief does not match the belief of the people in the pews. But I would say, President Joseph Fielding Smith wrote an entire book published in the 1960s called Man, His Origin and Destiny, which explains very clearly in 400 pages of concise language why the Mormon Church has to believe that there was no that the evolution is bunk because there was no death before the fall. And this keeps getting repeated in the Ensign every year, that you can't believe evolution and the Mormon faith because you are left with this problem of the fall introducing death into the world. And prophet after prophet after prophet and scripture after scripture has stated that there was no death before the fall. So if you are a Mormon and you look at a fossil, you're saying that's an impossibility because nothing could have died and fallen into the sand before Adam came to the Garden of
Eden. Which is why an intelligent engineer like your brother can believe something like, they were probably from a different planet.
Yes, Mormons, let me tell the world, all the people wonder what Mitt Romney is doing out there. Mormons believe this world was copied from another world. Which is still, that's just saying it's turtles all the way down. Because then, you're saying, what happened in that world? Evolution was there, but not here.
No. What I heard growing up was that the Earth was parts of other planets pulled together. And you get the leftovers from the other planets. That's what the dinosaurs are.
But then why are they in such nice strata?
Well, different parts. It's like there's more Kushka dolls from Russia, layers upon layers of other planets put together.
There's bizarre theories. But, ultimately, number four here is the church. Don't let the fringe scientists fool you. This church is anti-scientific, and it's anti-science.
You mean Hugh Nibley's not a real scientist?
He's a historian. I wouldn't credit him with his. I'm not saying the historian's barking at me.
He wrote about... people would consider science like where he goes into the all the Egyptian stuff. History is a science if it's done right.
Nibley's Egyptology needs to be evaluated by other Egyptologists.
Right.
Yeah, John, yeah, I think we're throwing the door wide open on all religions, really. That's the great battle of the ages, the science versus religion.
Yep.
And I think it's just a scary path for a lot of LDS people to start walking down when you start realizing that the flood... Well, first you start... Okay, so it wasn't the whole world. I'm okay with that. It was just local. You know, it's a local flood, and that sort of starts to drain away. And, you know, they're like, what's left? And the unicorns didn't make it. And, you know, it just is a really scary path for a lot of members to start going down when they realize the science doesn't back up their faith.
And if you take to point number four, if you take your children to church, you're going to be taking them to people who are hostile towards science and reason and common sense. Things that we have long since proven. And I use the example that you'll get fundamentalists who reject the principles based behind science they use every day. So they will go to the hospital and use things that are based on scientific principles. They will say, no, that can't be because those principles disagree with their religion. I want to create a rule. If I create a police state here in the United States, it will be you have to fully accept, you know, like science before you're allowed to use a microwave.
You must believe.
You know, if you're going to go on Sunday and preach that these things aren't, then you know, you don't believe in evolution, no flu shots for you, you know. No immunizations because
all you need
no,
is,
no, they'd be happy about that. Yes. They don't want the vaccinations, right?
You're right. You're right. Okay. Number three, misogyny. And this is what really walked me out of the church. This was the final straw.
Which is weird because I guess I was so, suppressed or oppressed would be the word that I didn't really realize it.
The misogyny in because we ranked it higher on the list is worse than the discrimination. And you just heard what I said about discrimination. That's pretty bad.
Well, I'm surprised women stay in the church, honestly.
It is so systematically because screwed up and bad. It's just awful.
We're socialized to it.
Well, we talked about how it's great for guys. Be on the flip side of the coin.
Because we're taught that our glory is in being a wife and mother. I mean, it's in the young women's manual right now that, you know, that they're supposed to be working right as their teenagers to become good wives and mothers. That's their goal.
Every women's organization in the church is an auxiliary. You guys can all look up what the definition of the word auxiliary is. It's not pertinent. It's not essential. Every woman in the church answers to a local leader. When the Relief Society was independent, the church smashed that. They're no longer independent. The Relief Society president used to be a lifelong calling, just like the prophet. The church smashed that, and they will change the women out of there.
When was that?
That was with Barbara, what's-her-face?
Didn't she die in 68 or something?
After like correlation.
1968?
Before that, yeah. The Relief Society president served till they died, just like the...
And it was after that women could start praying and sacramenting.
You realize that in my maleness, I have no clue of the history of the Relief Society or anything like that.
Women still aren't allowed to pray in conference. You'll never see a woman pray in conference. Women are just in every sense second class citizens.
And I never noticed it.
Women talk when they talk in conference. They dress in bright pastels to offset themselves from the serious, somber, and you know, business-like attitude of the men. They talk like children.
They talk like they're talking to children.
And if you think that, go work for a company. Go work for any company where there's women executives, and compare the way the women who are high up in the church function compared. Now the men function just like they're working for Goldman Sachs, right? But the women are nothing like the women who work for Goldman Sachs.
They're FAO Schwartz.
What is that?
It's a toy store.
So I mean, women in the church are oftentimes a parody of themselves. They have nothing, you know, like the church is it's just so awful down this path, and everybody from the outside can see it.
You want to hear kind of a funny story? When I was on my mission in the MTC in Provo, you go across the street to the temple, and you're allowed to go through endowment sessions or do baptisms for the dead. Not baptisms for the dead very often because they have so many BYU students, mainly the girls who aren't endowed. They come over and do plenty of baptisms. Anyway, so the baptismal font is in the basement of the temple. And for, and it's, you know, the 12 oxen and this font. It's very beautiful. And in the Provo Temple, they have these big glass windows and kind of like a seating area foyer you can sit and watch. And me and my companion, we were asked to go downstairs and do baptisms. Pretty rare. And I'm like very excited and hadn't done those in a while. I go downstairs and standing in the water with her arm raised to the square was this woman. She had long hair, like down middle back, or, you know, she was her back towards me. I was like, holy cow. And my testimony dropped out of me. Only did I realize it was actually a man with really long hair. But my testimony was so shaken that a woman was doing a man's job. That's the misogyny that's in the church. Yeah. That was the mindset that's there.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really sad. I mean, it's so sad the role of women.
And it affects us so deeply and subliminally that we don't even notice it. And in fact, we encourage it.
When I was talking to my mom, and I mentioned this the last podcast, talking to my mom about possibly interviewing them, my parents, for Voices, and it came up that I hadn't sent her an email giving my thoughts on women's conference, because I had said to her, I took notes the whole time, and I decided I probably shouldn't send this email, because as I was gathering my thoughts, even though I had made an effort to find really positive aspects of the messages and the lessons and the talks that they were giving, I was realizing, yeah, I don't think my mom's really going to want to read this. And so I had mentioned, you know, she said, well, you never gave me your, I never got an email from you. And I said, well, I just really had a feeling you weren't going to want to hear what I had to say. And she said, well, why? I just can't imagine. And da-da-da. And I said, well, you know, and I was trying to remember some of the things I had written and trying to remember some of the positive things, because I didn't want to just leave it flat. And so I was talking about, oh, you know, Sister So-and-so, I really liked the way she addressed people, and she was so confident, and she seemed really kind of unapologetic, and compared to the other women, of course. And even in my giving what I consider to be compliments, my mother, well, I have never in my life felt second fiddle to your father, and da-da. And then she just huffed and puffed and went away and started making beds.
Well, this is, you know, I said it was my daughter who is in nursery, and she's going to start into the Sunbeams the next year. And I just got off of a debate with three different women who debated with me that the church is not misogynistic. Now, you can argue that it's okay, but you can't look at an organization that says women are not allowed to serve in leadership and not say that's not discriminatory against women. And the church is worse. This is the worst part of this whole thing. The church is worse off for it, because women bring great things. They make great leaders.
We balance out men sometimes. So right. When you have men and women working as a team, and it even usually if it turns out better.
I agree with that. But even if not that whole sort of let's all join hands, you're cutting half of the population off from the leadership positions right there. That there are smart, capable women, not just because they're women, but just because they're smart, capable individuals that you're not putting into the high council or other positions.
Exactly.
You're just systematically shutting those people out.
Well, and then just as we were talking about things that, damaging to family relationships. If you didn't have so many men away from the home, taking that role out of the home, and you balanced it with some of the opportunities, the leadership opportunities that women could have in the church, and let fathers come back into families' lives a little bit, just that would be a benefit too.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you're losing half the talent pool. Okay, number two, psychological damage. Which is sort of my response to, you know, I oftentimes use the word culty, and I sort of do it as a joke, because I don't really like the term cult, because I think it's like an evangelical sort of beat up term. But what I would say instead is when I use the word culty, I'm using the word that it's a psychologically damaging institution, that it's practicing something that is not healthy for the individual. And I think the church does tons of these things. And what's crazy about that, and we sort of hit this earlier, you can sometimes do the same action. Like let's take some boys go out and join the football team. The coaches can be just over the top in the face of the boys, and some of the boys are going to be damaged by it, and some of the boys are going to thrive underneath it. So that's why it's hard to say, oh, the Mormon church is a cult, because, you know, some people really react negatively to, like, the mission environment where you can't have a name and you have to have your hair cut and you have to wear a uniform, and some people are going to thrive under that situation. But the church has all these institutions that are psychologically damaging to individuals.
I was telling these guys when we, before the podcast started, that one of the things that I was threatened with if I lost my testimony or if I was showing signs of losing my testimony, my parents had let me know that they would be checking me into a mental institution.
Yeah, we've covered in the podcast these like camps, these sort of youth prisons they have around here for kids who just don't read their scriptures.
Well, I think a lot of people are psychologically damaged just because they masturbated and they are told that that's evil and that they're evil when they do it. And that is, I mean, we've heard stories.
We've had people on the podcast who weren't allowed to go on missions while they were jerking off, probably by a bishop who's jerking off himself, you know?
Well, and they get to the point where they feel like the only thing they can do is end their lives because they can't stop. They can't stop masturbating for, I mean, they know that if they've tried, they can go like, you know, 6 months and then boom, they mess up again.
I worked for a guy when I was at BYU, he was a bishop, and he pulled the temple recommends from members who wouldn't commit to go to the temple once a week. And then he asked them if they went.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard him say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you had to go once a week or you couldn't keep your temple record.
I mean, that's a huge burden. And to not have a temple recommend means you can't go to weddings, you know, you can't support family things.
That is abuse.
Yeah. So I mean the church is riddled with this. Now I'm not saying every bishop or every stake president is abusive, but
And that wouldn't be psychologically damaging to like everybody, but to some people, just, you know, the pure manipulation of it would be.
And I think for a lot of faithful members, there's a bit of cognitive dissonance there when your righteous priesthood leader is obviously going on the crazy train and you're like, wait, he's my priesthood leader, I have to support him, but he's, you know,
to support him.
Right. So I mean, that's a I think there's some psychological abuse there, and because you suddenly you don't feel worthy because your faith is lacking because you don't support your leader.
Well, and if you don't fit in, I mean, like we talked about previously, if you don't fit the mold, you're going to probably face some psychological consequences. I mean, if you can't have children as a married couple.
Absolutely. Look at the whole young women's program. That's all psychological abuse, you know. They're putting their self value as part of this abstract concept of purity, which means no one touches your soft bits, and they even use the word value. I mean, value is a monetary system. They're teaching young women that they are a commodity, right there in those values. You know, that is unhealthy. That's not good.
I don't know if anybody would see it that way besides you, but I like it.
Well,
I think it's a subliminal. I mean, when you start to attach emotionally to things like that, I think it's very damaging. And because in the church, at the time I was growing up in the church, there wasn't a whole lot of talk about atoning sacrifice. I mean, when you screwed up, you screwed up. It wasn't like, oh, just, you know, repent and Jesus loves you. We're talking, you know, if you lose your virginity, for instance, you never get that back. It doesn't matter how much you repent.
You're damaged.
You can never offer yourself as a pure daughter of Zion if you've had sex. Mm. So
right. It kind of goes to that misogyny thing a bit.
Oh, yeah. I think it's very, the whole thing is very misogynistic, but I, absolutely the church commodifies sex. It's not something that say you're your owner of your own body. That's not a message you'll ever get from the church. You know. And you know, there's no boundaries. You, as a young man or young woman, you have to go into the bishop. You have to submit to every question they ask. He can ask whatever he wants. I've famously said on the podcast that in a BYU ward, they asked us about finger insertion, and there's nothing you could do about it. You know, they can ask that. What could I do? Who could I appeal to? Who could I say that's inappropriate? You shouldn't be asking everybody coming in whether or not they've inserted their fingers in places.
So, Johnny Lingo, right? Everyone remember that one? Classic Mormon cinema. The classic story of a successful trader in the Philippines. He goes and barters 8 cows for his new wife. I thought that was great, intrinsically moral, you know. And the moral of the story was his wife Mahana was like the tribe ugly, you know, and no one wanted to marry her.
And let's just, Mahana was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Her head was too big for her body. She looked like she had missed too many meals.
Her hair was combed down in front of her face.
My brother used to always say that scene.
But she was a beautiful woman. That always bothered me.
It's Hollywood.
Too.
You know she's a hottie.
She was a little emo. Yeah.
So no one wanted her on the island because, all the gossipy wives like, oh, he'll be lucky if she gets a horn and a tail for her or something like that.
You've watched this movie a lot.
Man, it is a classic.
He's all jacked up. He's excited.
You know, well, what's funny about it is like, I thought this was a great moral story. So he buys his wife for 8 cows, way more than she's worth. And so her self-worth grows to reach that 8 cow level.
I thought she was a 10 cow wife.
No, 8 cows. No, she's not quite. Anyway. So at the end of the movie, and she's like, at the end of the movie, she's gorgeous. You know, she realized her 8 cow worth. And I thought this was a great moral message. And only during this like post-Mormon phase that was brought to my attention how demeaning it was for women to say, oh, by the way, the men are going to barter and sell you like property. You know, you're worth cows, you know.
So are you saying you're not going to let your daughter check this out from the church library?
No, I probably will. It is great cinema.
Oh, no!
I'm just kidding. I was so obtuse. I never got that message out of it.
See, I would say that people argue that. Say, oh, I never took it that way. Yeah. These subtle messages are creeping into your head all the time. And the message there is women have a commodified value. And I could show you thousands of instances of that in the church, that women are a commodity to be traded in.
Right. So
especially women's sexuality.
And I think if we take it further, this self-worth theme, that damage, we've talked in the podcast before about, you know, gay individuals and the thing they're less than, you know, children of God because they have these feelings. I think for like a guy like me, it was pretty square. You know, when I slipped, I did small stuff. I felt so bad, you know.
But if you thought that the core of your being was evil.
If, you know, I can't imagine how like the suicidal thoughts is just, it is atrocious.
It would be huge.
I think psychological damage is definitely a reason to step back away from the church. No, I would agree with that one.
It is the number two reason.
Well, just to close with this, I don't know if it's psychological damage, but it just goes to the idea of the manipulation and the subtleties and the things you pick up. When I was about 16 or 17, I was quickly realizing that all I had were my thoughts. Those were the only thing that was private in my household. Nothing was private. We couldn't lock the bathroom door. We didn't have locks in the bath or on our bedroom doors. It was routine that my parents would read through our journals or diaries or whatever if they so felt the need to check up on us or just monitor our spiritual progress. So my thoughts were all that I had. And I remember one night having some kind of crying fit. You know, I remember sitting on the 20-gallon bucket of food storage of wheat. Yeah, exactly. In the kitchen and just, you know, tears streaming down my face and just, I don't even remember what it was for. I'm sure something so insignificant. And I remember saying something to that effect, well, at least I have my thoughts. And, oh, I was quickly told that Heavenly Father, of course, can read my thoughts. And it went even further that a discerning priesthood holder knows the heart of any, you know, wayward soul. And I seriously developed this way of thinking that priesthood holders could read my mind. That is freaking crazy. I recognize that now, but I was so terrified to have thoughts, period. But then like when spontaneous thoughts would start to creep up and I realized I had no control over the spontaneity of thought, I was just like, I am effed. Like, this is never gonna work. I'm never gonna survive in this religion, because I really believed that if a man wanted to read my thoughts, he could. Because, I mean, I didn't have the priesthood to ward him off, first of all. I wasn't on the same level as he was. And
he had magical powers.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone there. I believe that your priesthood leaders had the spirit of discernment, that they could get that bell ring when you're lying.
Every priesthood holder could discern me if he so chose.
In those interviews,
it's an intrusive invade. Like, not only is my body not mine, I don't even have my thoughts anymore.
Well, you know, from a man with a priesthood power, it's kind of like X-ray vision for Superman. You have to learn to control it. Otherwise, it really, you know, can't hear yourself thinking.
you guys have heard the story. I think it was President Packer who told the story about, you know, that it's a mission president or something is looking out over the field of missionaries. And he was like, oh, I could tell by their counts. I could see that one of them was having a hard time. And President Packer says there were three of them.
Oh, yes.
But this story is circa the time when George P. Lee was in the 70. If they were so good at discernment, couldn't they tell they had a child molester in the 70? You know, it just falls apart. I'm sorry. All right. The number one reason.
Well, that you're leading. Nice segue, John.
The number one reason to leave the church is that the leaders, i.e. prophets, seers, and revelators, lie or hide things from their members. And therefore, which is an important thing is written here, therefore, we don't want to show our support. We don't want to support an institution that systematically lies and dissembles and covers up the truth and represents half-truths. You're supporting an organization that is fundamentally dishonest. Does anybody
doubt?
Thank
you. Good night.
You know, it's a huge one. And we've pointed out in our, you know, 100 and whatever it is episodes, many instances of this. And the institution, Mormonism has a fundamental problem in my mind. It is so insistent upon the behavior, the honesty to the church of its members, because there's times when it's behaved dishonestly outside. The church, by its own admission, bribes officials right now, rather than government officials, rather than say, no, we don't play that game. We're honest. We're disciples of Jesus Christ, that we will allow God to open the path for us. We don't have to pay bribes. That, you know, they don't take that stand. So they will be dishonest and deceitful in their methods. Let me look at Prop 8. They've caught setting up shell companies and doing stuff like that. They're constantly doing underhanded things like that. But they insist on this institutional honesty that we just talked about, that the membership has to lay bare everything to the leadership. The leadership has full access to anything that the members have, but that's not anything that's given the other way, and the church can get away with murder. Some would say literally, you know, that going through and rewriting manuals and changing history and leaving out key facts and
like
covering
the Mountain
things
Meadows
up.
Massacre.
Yeah, and I'm even
I never
about
learned about that
simple things
church.
Like the Brigham Young manual, where they edited it to make where he had talked about his wives, and they edited it to make him look like a monogamist. That if you look at the timeline in those, I'm pointing at those manuals, they have. They have the timeline for all the prophets. They have his marriage.
Marriage.
to omit that information is a lie. To suggest by omission that he only married once is a lie. It's deceit, and they know it. They know they're doing that. They are full on. And there's times, you know, in church history, they full on denied practices that they knew full well were happening.
Yeah, but that's useful because then not only do the people in their church not know about troubling facts, but then when they hear about those troubling facts from apostates or non-members, they just think that they're full of baloney and that those people have been lied to. Obviously, they don't have their facts straight, because I grew up in Mormonism and I never heard that before. So you must be lying, or you must not know your facts.
You know, in my disaffection, all the steps we've talked about, you know, the boring anti-scientific or discrimination, all those things, you know, for me, you know, I think everyone's kind of aware of it a little bit. To me, it's when I started doing, you know, looking more to things, and I started to find those lies. I think that's what destroyed me the most. That the people that I revered the most on this earth, you know, the people I thought should be most Christ-like, were being deceptive to me. And to me, and that really hurt something deep inside, that my, I don't want to call them heroes, but the men I looked up to the most were more human than I realized. And that was incredibly destructive to my testimony.
Yeah, that was really hurtful to me too. Because you put so much into it as a faithful member. You put everything into it. And then to find out that they were purposefully not telling you things that they should have.
I don't know if you were like me, but I could take Joseph Smith and all his little weirdness, because he's so far in the past, and Brigham Young was so big.
Young,
he's
oh
not going to be
gosh.
Perfect. But modern day prophets, they are, you know, they're here, they're now, they're dealing with the issues that I'm dealing with. Those kind of things, those were what destroyed me. I was being lied to, deceived now.
Yeah, I mean, you can read the things from court transcripts, you don't believe the books, with the Hoffman, you know, stuff. Not that old, you know, these guys, are, a lot of these guys are still kicking around. And there were, the church was purposefully deceiving, you know, and...
Or they had plans for deceit.
They also allow for things to go, I mean, here's a classic one, because I just thought of it with that. The church still allows people to go around and say the church has no paid clergy, right?
Yes.
Hinckley, who I think came in the Quorum of the Twelve when he was 36, and before that he worked for the Deseret News. So he's basically a lifelong church member. Had Christensen buy a Hoffman document for $400,000 of his own personal money. This is $400,000 in 1982 or whatever that he is kicking around to put out for a forgery.
You don't think that the church just wrote him a check and said, here's a bonus, now use it to buy that?
They might have, but that doesn't help this case any, because that's dishonesty. You know, you've got these things going on.
Why don't
money
we
moving
know
around
how much they make since we as members pay for
We've
their
had several
salaries.
Instances where there's been estate battles after Brigham Young died, after Joseph F. Smith died, where there's colossal sums of money. And at the same time, people are saying that the church, you know, these guys are clergy by any definition of the, and they'll say, oh, it's a stipend. I don't care if you call it a stipend or a living allowance. It's a lot of money that these guys are having. So, and I'm not saying they shouldn't get paid, but it's the church's duplicity on things like this, trying to pretend the church has no paid clergy. News to everybody who doesn't know, the missionaries are paid clergy because they were getting in trouble with the IRS. Because members of the church, this happened in like 91, 92, 90, around about there, they were writing off on their taxes, the money they were sending to their missionaries. And the IRS said, no, you can't do that. You're just sending money to your kid. So they changed it so that everybody sends money to the church and the church pays the missionaries. And they pay them low enough that it falls underneath the radar and they're under clergy. But the missionaries are paid clergy. By the IRS's definition. And the church still, we don't have paid clergy. They have paid clergy. They have 50,000 of them walking around the green earth, you know?
Well, isn't that Damon Smith's book, The Book of Mammon, say that like the book of 70s, the 70s on up all get some sort of living stipend?
The 70s get paid. Mission presidents get paid. The missionaries get paid. Mission presidents.
But really, the missionaries have to pay for themselves. But
there's
I
also,
guess on the taxes, they're paid.
There's also a lot of functionaries. I've met some of these guys who work for the church who basically work as assistants as full time and do things. Like I knew a guy who would set up the temples, you know, basically everything he was doing was sort of under the auspice of clergy, and he was a full time employee. You know, so you can play these games where but once again, I'm not against them paying those guys. I'm just against the church letting,
pretending,
and you won't
that
find the church. You won't find the church itself saying the church doesn't have paid clergy. They're smarter than that. But they allow that sort of stuff to float out there. They don't
correct. Well, also with the honesty, I think, like I was saying, people give a whole lot of money to the church and it's,
then they don't account for it.
They don't account for it. They don't tell people what percentage, I mean, at least what percentage is going where, if not the actual numbers, would be nice.
Yeah, I wish I could remember these exact numbers, but it was like a year ago, the church was bragging about, over the last 30 years, we spent X number of billion dollars on, you know, pure charity things. And some wise ass did the math and said, oh, 30 years, this much money, and here's a member. It equated like to a couple bucks per member per year. You know, the church was touting this big figure out, but when you actually did the math, it was a minuscule amount of their money. Yeah, and that, once again, that goes to the deception of, we don't know what they're doing. I work out in Lake Park out in West Valley. There is the headquarters of IHC, a great big hospital, headquarters of Discover Card, one of their big ones. There's the United Healthcare building. There's these huge buildings. The church owns every one of those buildings. The church owns the Beneficial Life building. What I was thinking about just going around Salt Lake taking pictures of all these buildings the church owns that are purely business buildings, you know. And people, and they say, we're a church, but they're engaged in, they own an insurance company, they own banks, they own cattle operations, they own huge stakes in railroads, they do all these things that have nothing to do with church. But they keep it under holding companies that own companies that own companies, and they hide it under all this tax code, and there's all sorts of shenanigans going on. To me, if you're going to be Jesus's church, you don't have to do all that stuff. You know, you can say, we got nothing to hide, you know.
We're with you, brother.
Any other tangents we want to, any other stuff we want to throw in this trunk, as long as we're just airing every gripe about the church under the honesty one.
I know. I think you could save a lot of souls, keep them in the church if they were more honest. And I think that's the honest truth.
Well,
I think they're going to have to do that, because with as accessible as information is now, people are finding it and they're leaving because of that. And I think that the leaders will do it carefully and selectively, but I think that they will start to put that information out there with their own little twist on it, so that they can prepare their members for when they encounter the information.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they'll do it honestly still. I think they'll twist it.
The honest, their spin. I think the church's stance that doesn't involve itself in apologetics, but allows splinter groups
the
like
the church can't say that. It pays
for farms, it,
Fair and Farms. It owns farms.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but that's not the church's official position. I think that also bugged me too, that the church can't stand up for itself and say, here's the doctrine, this is what we believe, here are the reasons why. Signed, President Monson.
Look, the church is everybody knows the church is very controlling of every detail. So because of that, they are responsible for everything that's printed under their title. That, you know, because if you had a policy saying we have a press, you know, look like Notre Dame Press, like the Catholic Church does not influence the academics at Notre Dame. They have a strict policy. They don't. So the Catholic Church has plausible deniability in anything that they say, we're not responsible for that. But if the church goes in and manhandles everything, then the church becomes responsible for. So I hold the church 100% responsible for everything Farms puts out, for everything that's run at Deseret Book. So the church can't say, the church is endorsing Sean Hannity by running his books, because they sure as hell will pull books for just the tiniest infraction on other things. So you have to say, well, if this is the editorial standard they're going to use in terms of publishing, we can therefore assume that everything else passed the vetting process. Now, I'm not saying that's fair, but they own that. Those are the big boy pants that they pulled on. And so the church is making a conscious, I can't believe anything else. Then the church is making a conscious decision to stock the Sean Hannity books in Deseret Book.
What's your take? Do you think President Monson, Corman 12 have a hands in dishonesty, or are you saying that the huge corporation church building gets muddled so much by the top that you know, they're just signing a stack of documents?
Both. And I think the church started very early on under Joseph Smith of a practice of deception and duplicity, and I think it's rotted the church to the core. And it stayed with us. I mean, you can find it all through church history of these instances of flat out lying.
Yeah, if my tangent, the phrase "lying for the Lord." Oh my heck!
I know, or some truths aren't useful.
I could. That blew my mind.
I thought that one was a lie. I honestly thought someone made that up.
Made what?
Some truths aren't useful.
Yeah, some truths. I was like, really? When I saw it in the documentary, I was baffled.
What? That it was like expected to life the Lord during the plague me days. I just blew my mind because I was like, honesty in all things.
Oh, yeah.
Except when it counts.
Read the Smoot hearings. It's just a fascinating study. And
well, and I think I said this recently, or otherwise I was just talking to you. I can't remember anymore what was said on a podcast and what was just talking to you. But what really did it for me was Hinckley's reaction to the question about becoming gods, because I knew that he was being false. And that
we talked about this last week. Yeah.
Was it on a podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, everybody. But yeah, maybe that's a huge deal. If your prophet isn't telling the truth, then how can you follow him? How can you believe it? He's a prophet if he's not going to tell the truth.
Pearls before swine, Zilpha. Come on. You just don't throw out deep doctrines like that on national TV.
I was never taught it was a deep doctrine. Like, that was just what you
that was what made us so special
kid.
And unique and wonderful and different and divine and all those other great things.
I
didn't know it was something to be embarrassed about until that moment.
I think to sort of circle back. I want to make sure that because this is a point that's clear in my mind, but I don't make clear enough, that I want to make a distinction between the church here and its members. Because I think Mormons individually are honest, good people for the most part. They tend to be very straightforward people. And what's unfortunate is most Mormons, because like I was saying before, they've been trained organizationally to be very honest almost to a detriment to themselves. So it's unfortunate there's all these people who believe very highly in the principle of honesty that are part of this organization that's very deceptive. And as we pointed out, one of the deceptions is that they keep that from the membership. So, right. So this is one of the terrible things, that once you discover this, you're sort of in on the con. And this is why this is at our number one list. If you know the church is out there sort of telling these lies about itself and about other things, you're part of the game at that point. You know, you're no longer like an innocent victim. So I think most of the membership are victims of this.
Right. So if you're a never Mormon and you ask a Mormon one of these disturbing questions or some kind of bit of history that you've heard, and they tell you that that isn't true, it's not that they're lying. They just do not know. The Mormon does not know.
Yeah, yeah. Oftentimes they don't know. You see, after I was at Ballard a few years ago, told the membership in conference they need to get out online, and all these like teenage girls started recording YouTube videos. And they were just lessons in ignorance of their own. You know, like they didn't understand their own faith and they were saying things that were wrong, but they just didn't know any better. You know, and it's sad. There's a TV show on a few years ago that Zilpha and I watched. It was called Average Joe. It was a setup. It was one of those reality programs. There were 16 people living in this mansion, and they were. But the whole thing was a setup. The whole thing was a con. And there was one guy who wasn't in on it. Everybody else was an actor. So the idea, the premise of the show was they would make it more and more bizarre. You know, it was one of those where they whittle it down to the final guy wins the weekend away in Jamaica or whatever. And the show was sort of funny and sort of like a train wreck as they manipulated this guy. But everybody was in on the con. The second season, they brought in a man and a woman. So there were two people who weren't in on it. But the woman, obviously, as the serpent tells us, was more cunning than the man, and she figured out halfway in between. So the producers had a decision to make, and the decision they made was they were going to let her in on the con now and try to salvage, you know, the show and try to keep the other guy. The problem is she became sort of over the top. She wasn't a trained actor like everybody else was. So she like became worse in the con and in a way more vindictive than the actors were. And that's why I have this at number one here. When you go to church and you know about this stuff and you're still holding callings, and there's this sort of like creepiness about it to me, that you're in on the con, but you're in the con in a nasty sort of way because you know better. And that's why I think, and I'm not speaking for everybody here, but for myself, I can't be part of the organization anymore because I know it's dirt.
John, I've actually been kind of thinking a little bit opposite in that, you know, running for the hills. I kind of think of the going back to save the few, you know, bring them out with me, going back in the water, save up the other drowning victims, pull them out.
I admire that, and I think that's probably a valid reason to stay. And did we even have that on our list? To the top 10 reasons to stay to try to save everybody else.
We mentioned it with number 10 because like, there's...
Oh, okay, yeah. So I just personally, and I very well acknowledge I might be wrong on this point, but I personally think that the church is so sophisticated at drowning that message out that it can't be done. This is John. I'm hope I'm wrong because I know there's a lot of great people who are trying to work that from the inside. But I think the church has learned in dealing with apostasy, because one thing the church is really talented at dealing with apostates, that they have a system to silence and nullify your effect. And unless there is a whole segment of people who will get up in very uncomfortable ways and express themselves, I think the church just has systematic ways to dampen out that effect. I hope I'm wrong.
So if all
go
of
back
us,
and try.
If all of us listening to this podcast go back to church, would it make a difference?
Because I think, and this is the principle of the podcast, one of the reasons we talk about sex so much, one of the reasons we talk about other things, is that you have to sort of live out loud so that other people realize what behaviors are normal, and you remove that shame from feeling normal things like, whoa, this is weird. I don't like it as a young woman when the young men get all these public accolades and get these merit badges and scouting stuff, and I'm sitting here back here, I don't get the same thing. So I think the church sort of wants to silence that. And if enough people say it and say, this isn't right, you know, I'm not going to support that, then it can happen. But that's where I am of the opinion that you should walk out. But others are the opinion you should stay and fix it, and maybe it'll work. I hope I'm wrong. Maybe it takes both. I don't know.
Takes both.
Well, the chosen generation can do anything.
That's true. We're special.
So yeah, there you have it. The top 10 reasons that, and Mormon Expression thinks that the top 10 good reasons to leave the church. Now, I don't mean this list as either that you should stay in the church or that you should leave the church, but I think these are the reasons to either stay in or leave. And obviously it's going to play out individually. There's things here that, are very annoying to me or meaningful to me that other people may not care about, you know?
Wait, we forgot to mention a very important one, or maybe it's in here and I missed it. And that is taking the bullets for our kids, leaving the church so, you know, if we have doubts.
That was kind of number nine.
I think it happens. Oh yeah, number nine is family relationships, and number two is psychological damage. You know, yeah. I think what you're saying is saying the church is damaging, and I don't want my children.
Why perpetuate that?
But it's implied in that there's the leaving is hard. So a lot of people, that's on the other list, that you're going to suffer these consequences from leaving. And I think to yours, sort of a synthesis, saying I'm going to suffer the consequences because of these negative effects.
It's definitely not easy. Either way you go, once a person's, you know, walls start to crack and fall down a bit, you are stuck in a hard place, and staying or leaving, it's going to be tough.
You can't put the genie back in the whatever lamp. That was me rubbing my lamp.
Yes, it was.
I'm feeling a little. I'm feeling a little depressed after this.
Well, fight song.
It is a little depressing, and it's also late, so we probably just need to
just wrap it up. All right. Well, any last words? All right. Well, as always, the discussion continues on the website at mormonexpression.com. You can also send us a message at mail@mormonexpression.com, and we'll try to answer those as best as we can. I'll check out our sister podcast, Mormon Expression Voices. You can search for us on iTunes or through an RSS feed. And that podcast is devoted completely to personal stories of people who've had their own faith journey, where we focus more on issues that focus more on people. So they have produced several podcasts, and they'll continue to do so. So I invite everybody to check that out. Thanks again to my lovely panel. Yeah, thanks, that's right. John. I'm looking at you, Patrick.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks, John.
It was a nice change. It was a good addition.
Yeah.
Oh, Patrick?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was more negative than he.
I know. I liked it, but I also...
I had 10 reasons to be negative.
It was a nice little sparring partner for a minute there.
All right. Yeah. I do best with a sparring partner. Okay. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.